This is an interview with John Carrier Weaver, newly resigned president of the University of Wisconsin System. It is being conducted by Donna Taylor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Archives in the Wisconsin Foundation meeting room of the Wisconsin Center on August 5th, 1977. Mr. Weaver, I'd like to begin this morning with a little bit of discussion of your background. It's known that your father was on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin and was a very important member here for many years, and that you grew up in Madison and went to school here. I wonder if you'd comment a little bit about your experiences as a, if you like, faculty brat, about attending Wisconsin High and going to the University of Wisconsin as an undergrad and graduate student.
Well, it's true that I did grow up in Madison. Madison certainly has all of the features of being, for me, a hometown. I came to Madison with my father and mother when I was 2 years old. My father, at the time I was born, was teaching at Northwestern and down in Evanston, Illinois. And he then spent a year at Whitewater en route to Madison. So that I was two when we, as a family of three, which was the total and ultimate size of my immediate family, moved to Madison. We lived first over on Kays Avenue, near Monroe Street, near West Lawn Avenue. Kays is right along the Illinois Central Tracks over on the, I guess really it's a bit outside what would be normally called University Heights. And I first went to school from there at Randall School at the corner of Spooner and Regent Street. And I don't remember exactly the year, but it was in my very early years of grade school, at least, that my family moved to what was their only other residence in Madison, at the corner of Spooner and Summit, 2 miles or 2 blocks up the other side of, or to the north of Randall School. And I, of course, continued going to Randall School. And I grew up then in the years that I remember the best as a boy and young man, living in that home on the corner of Spooner and Summit, in pretty much the heart of what we call the University Heights area of the city. And that area is one that has changed very little, really, over the last 50 years, even in its physical appearance, except for the fact that all of its magnificent elm trees grew up, and now two-thirds or three-quarters of them are gone with the Dutch elm disease. That area looks very much as it did when I grew up there. It was at the end of the seventh grade, as I remember it, at the Randall School, that by some wave of the wand, I skipped the eighth grade and went directly to Wisconsin High School. The University High School, located on the university campus. University High School was a fairly small high school, as public high school institutions go. As I recall, the student body at Wisconsin High in the 4 years I went there, which would have been 1928 to 1932, was about 250 students. But it was a most unusual educational experience because the university high school was pretty largely taught and operated by people who were also professors at the university. And if ever a high school was one in which young people were trained to go to a university, that certainly was one of them, because you spent a great deal of your time in the classroom with people who were university teachers. Furthermore, of course, a very large percentage, or a significant percentage at least, of the students at the university high school were the sons or daughters of university faculty members, and who were growing up in a home environment that tended to lead them toward collegiate education. So it was an unusual high school experience. I remember that the commencement address at my high school, commencement in June of 1932, was given by Glenn Frank, who was then the president of the university. And that was a sort of a climax to a whole high school experience that took place very much in the aura of a great university. And I don't think it ever occurred to me that I wouldn't go on to college. I mean, it was a sort of a normal expectation in the kind of a household that I had grown up in and the kind of surrounding environment in which I'd gone to high school.
So you just didn't question it?
I really didn't question it. I did question. I do remember very definitely having questioned whether or not I should go to the University of Wisconsin. Not because I didn't recognize it as a first-class institution and a fine place to go for a university education, but because I did have some concern that because my father and mother were well-known in the faculty circles of the university here in Madison, that I could conceivably be an embarrassment either to them or to other members of the faculty who would know me through knowing my family. And I just thought, I remember thinking very seriously that it probably would be better for me to go away from home and away from the very familiar milieu of this faculty setting to college when I did graduate from high school. And my father's first teaching position had been at Dartmouth, and he had always thought very highly of Dartmouth, and I guess that just out of the conversations that related at home to that as one Eastern institution, both my family and I gave very serious consideration to my applying to Dartmouth to go to college.
What happened?
The Depression.
Oh, yes.
The Depression came along, and money became very tight, and university faculty people, as you well remember, were beginning to face cuts in salary.
So-called waivers about then.
It just seemed, it just all of a sudden seemed that this was going to be a financial pressure and difficulty that probably more than counterbalanced any embarrassment there might be of my being right here in my father and mother's own backyard.
You hadn't considered any other state institution?
No, for some reason I don't recall that I did. And of course, the biggest expenses in those days of going away to school was your living expenses anyway, and I had the alternative of staying at home, and which of course was a much less expensive thing for my family and everyone concerned, and going to school right here at home, which is what I ultimately did. And I'm glad to say that I don't recall any instances in my university experience in which I think it was either a problem for my family or for me that I just stayed right here. To go back for just a moment to the Wisconsin High School, as one evidence of what I was saying about the privilege I think the young people had who went to that high school in terms of preparation for going on with the collegiate work. Just imagine that high school, the year I graduated in 1932, had a graduating class of, I imagine, about 50 people. 4 years later, and most of those 50 who graduated in that class I was in, I don't know exactly how many, of course, at this time, but I'll guess 40 of those 50 went to the University of Wisconsin. 4 years later, when the 40 members of the senior class of better than 2,000 in the University of Wisconsin graduated in 1936, 10 of those 2,000 plus Wisconsin students were among the 40 Phi Beta Kappas, which is pretty good evidence that we've been trained to go to school.
Pretty good ratio, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, really, that 10 out of 40 Phi Beta Kappas in a class of 2,200 would be from that one little high school. In part, I think you have to attribute that to the fact that a lot, as I say, of those Wisconsin high school students came from faculty families where an intellectual way of life was perhaps a little more easily come by than in the average American family. But it also, I think, was a great tribute to the fact that the Wisconsin High faculty gave a very superior high school education to the young people who were privileged to go there in those years. But in any event, I was an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin from 1932 to 1936. And I can't imagine having had a more satisfying or a more intellectually significant undergraduate education than I had here. I ranged around in my life as a student with classes among people of real stature in their field, and people capable of exciting one's mind, like old Philo Buck in comparative literature, or Bill Kiekhofer in economics, or George Bryan in botany. George Bryan made beginning botany improbable a subject for as it would be for one to say this about. He made botany one so exciting you just sat out on the edge of your seat. He just had that capacity for picking up a student's mind and stretching it and making it seem significant step by step all the way through the things he taught. I began really thinking I was going to major in botany. It was a subject in which I was always very much interested. But I somehow got turned into geography along about my junior year. I guess I had taken some geography a little earlier than that, but I remember I decided to major in geography as a probably as a junior. And I got into a program that was then extant in the university's life that I guess was phased out not too long after that, in which certain selected students were permitted to undertake a program that would lead to completing both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in 4 years. And I undertook to do that. And at the end of my junior year, I spent the summer in southwestern Nevada doing field work to write a master's thesis in geography. And it was my intent to seek to complete a master's and bachelor's degree in 1936. When I came back for my senior year, however, although I'd had a very successful field experience in Nevada and certainly had the material drawn together to do a reputable master's thesis, I just began to find there was so much more I wanted out of the university as an undergraduate than I was going to be able to do it in 4 years, trying to cram in a graduate degree along with it, that I found myself asking for permission to drop back and take a BA at the end of my 4 years and the master's degree at the end of the fifth year in the more normal progression. And I think many people had the same experience, that what was the real advantage of the acceleration that we'd somehow gotten ourselves into? And so I actually did take my bachelor's degree in 36 and ultimately my master's in 37.
What kinds of things did you pursue that you wouldn't have done otherwise?
Well, other kinds of coursework than just the botany and the geology and the geography that were central to my my major interest. I found myself wanting to take courses in comparative literature with Philo Buck and courses in psychology and to be able to range around the curriculum a bit just to satisfy intellectual curiosity, if nothing else. And I just found that if I was going to stick to this four-year program to 2 degrees, that the constrictions on my choices and my time got so tight that it just wasn't working out as comfortably as I wanted it to. Furthermore, I was an active member of the university debating team and other forensic activities. I was an active member of my social fraternity and participated somewhat to my enjoyment in campus politics, and I just didn't have time to do everything I wanted to do, and so I slowed it back down to a more normal pace, and I'm certainly glad I did, because my life as a university student here in those years was a very rich one, I think, and I was stimulated by my teachers. I enjoyed myself with the extracurricular activities, and it was a fine experience.
You make it sound as though it were a foregone conclusion that you would go on for a PhD.
Well, I guess I shouldn't do that exactly, although there was a time in my early years in college when I had some thought of going into law. I loved debating. I loved thinking on my feet in the manner in which I visualized might be the way of life one would have in the courtroom as a lawyer. And I toyed with that idea for a while, but I don't know, somehow I guess that the feeling kept being dominant in my mind that the life of a professor, the life of the mind and of scholarly activity that I was so familiar with in watching my father's life and the life of the friends he around him, all of whom were very happy with and very satisfied with the academic way of life, that certainly before I got very close to the end of my undergraduate years, I think I had come to the conclusion I wanted to pursue an academic career. And by the time I was down there working on a master's degree, I'm sure I never saw a master's degree as a terminal degree. It was just a way of getting ready to work on to a PhD, which was certainly obviously what one would need to do to pursue a successful academic career in the general areas, at least, in which I was interested. And so I guess I did fairly easily slip into the notion that I did want to pursue an academic career, that I wanted to teach, and that I would pursue a PhD degree. When I got down to the end of that master's degree in 1937, here I'd been in the university for 5 years and I still was living at home. Although I was a member of a fraternity and I spent some time at the fraternity, although I never actually lived down there. And it certainly seemed clear to me, and my father and mother certainly didn't disagree. In fact, I think they encouraged my thought at the time, that if I was going to pursue a PhD right straight after the BA and master's degrees that I had finished or was going to be finishing in 37, that I probably ought to go somewhere else for a PhD. I shouldn't have all my earned degrees from Wisconsin. And somewhere there along around the year 1936-37, as I was finishing my master's degree, Professor Werner Finch, who was then the chairman of the geography department here at Madison, and who was willing to encourage me to go elsewhere for a PhD, just for a different background and experience with different ideas and people. Geography department here was a 4 or 5 man department at the time, and I'd had a great deal of the work of all of those people by the time I'd gotten toward the end of my master's degree. And they agreed too that it would be good for me to go to another institution, and I was I don't know whether it was their initial encouragement or the idea that I developed for myself that led me to choose to go to Berkeley, where Professor Carl Sauer, who was one of the great minds of my profession, was the chairman of a small but very distinguished department of geography. And with the aid of Professor Finch raising questions with the Berkeley department, I was offered a teaching assistantship at Berkeley and for the academic year beginning in the fall of 1937. And away I went to Berkeley. It was a marvelous experience. Carl Sauer was one of the most one of the most exciting minds I've ever had any contact with. One of the big minds of the University of California over a period of 35 or so years, and certainly one of the most influential minds in the history of American geography. And I had just a very, very stimulating and rewarding experience with him and with some of his colleagues in that California department. I lived at the International House in Berkeley, which was also an interesting experience.
Must have been.
They didn't take a lot of American students, but somehow my application was accepted, and I got to know at close range and as good friends fellow students at Berkeley from all over the world, and that in itself was a very interesting dimension to my experience there. The interesting thing was that came the spring of 1938, and I was completing my first year as a graduate student, PhD student at Berkeley, and I had done well there. And I had almost a straight A record at Berkeley. And they wanted very much to have me return and encouraged me to come back to complete my PhD. And and offered me a continuing appointment as a teaching assistant. And it seemed, for many reasons, that it would be an awfully good idea to do that. And I was certainly happy there. But that very, right in the early part of that spring, I got an offer from the University of Wisconsin Graduate School of one of the, I don't know how many there were, but very few, maybe four or five, full-time fellowships that the graduate school here then had to grant if I wanted to come back to finish my PhD here at Madison. Well, I was torn between the fact that there would be an advantage to me in having one of my degrees from another university, and the fact that to stay at Berkeley, I was going to have to work half-time as a teaching assistant, which wasn't all that bad. I mean, it was good experience. But it also was going to mean that it would be a longer road to the completion of my degree.
Yes, that certainly would have been.
Because I could come home here to Wisconsin and get even a little better financial assistance and work full-time on my graduate work.
It's a strong inducement.
So I finally, and it was a real honor to have one of those all-university fellowships in the open competition in those years. And
had you applied for this, or did one apply for these?
No, as I recall it, my recollection is that these came only on recommendation of your department. I don't think you applied for them. I think I got it because the geography department here at Madison recommended me for it. And it was awarded, and I was told that it was awarded to me if I would return. Because I remember it came as quite a surprise to me, because I don't recall that I had I'd been involved in any sequence of events that led me to think this might happen. In any event, it was finally, in the final analysis, it was too much of an inducement to turn down, and I, with some reluctance, but certainly I've never regretted coming back to Wisconsin. I came back to Madison in the summer of 1938, after having had a very stimulating and pleasant year at Berkeley, and proceeded to the completion of my PhD here at Madison. I actually completed all my coursework and had all of the field work for my thesis completed, and really everything was done but the writing of my thesis. The research was done, field work was done, and the coursework was done. My prelims had been passed, and when in the summer of 1940 I was recommended by the geography department here to the American Geographical Society of New York, which was then looking for a new member of their staff to become assistant editor of the Geographical Review, which is the principal professional publication of the field of geography, and to be a member of the research staff at the American Geographical Society. Well, this was a very unusual kind of an opportunity in itself. The Geographical Society hadn't gone out to seek a new young staff member in the profession at large for many years. I was offered the job, and although both my father and I were a little reluctant to see me leave Madison with my PhD not really finished and to start undertaking a full-time job, because lots of people have fallen by the wayside doing that, I was convinced of my ability to finish the writing of that thesis even though on a full-time job in New York, and felt that the position was of such unusual opportunity that I really should do it, and I accepted it. And that summer I married my wife, who was a graduate of the University of California at Berkeley, and who came to Madison to do graduate work in speech at Wisconsin in 1938. Interestingly enough, Roberta and I did not know each other, and they did not meet each other and hadn't known each other in the year I was in California.
I was going to ask about that.
Which actually was her senior year at Berkeley, when I was out there doing my first year as a PhD student. But we did not meet in Berkeley. I met her after I returned here to accept the fellowship that I was speaking of, and she came here to do a master's degree in the speech department, of which my father, of course, was then the chairman, and she was indeed an advisee of my father's. I can well remember my father commenting one evening at the dinner table in that fall of 1938 that he had a new graduate student from California that he thought I'd like to meet. And I met Ms. Weaver, or met Roberta at the State Teachers Convention in Milwaukee late that fall. She was over there at some of the meetings that the speech people always attended from here at the State Teachers Convention, and I was just there, having gone over there with my parents, and we often laughed that Roberta picked me up in a hotel lobby. I was sitting in the lobby of the Pfister Hotel reading the newspaper, and she came by, saw me sitting there, and walked up to me and said, "Aren't you Professor Weaver's son?" And we introduced herself, and we met there in the Pfister Hotel of Milwaukee, which we both vividly and well remember. And it was about a year and a half later then, when she had continued her work here in the speech department and completing her master's degree in speech here. She and I were married in August of 1940 when I had accepted the job at the American Geographical Society. We were married in Berkeley and crossed the country by train in a sort of a quick honeymoon from Berkeley to New York.
5-day trip it was then, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. And we set up housekeeping in a small 1.5 room apartment on the north edge of Manhattan Island. And I went to work at the American Geographical Society. I worked mighty hard with most all of my time off, my evenings and my weekends, for most of the next 2 years, getting that thesis finished, which Roberta typed 5 times in the process, which was more of an undertaking than it might sound, since there were, I think the final version of that thesis was something in excess of 1,000 pages. And she, during those 2 years, exercised her oral interpretation expertise that she had pursued as a graduate student here at Wisconsin as a storyteller in the New York public library system. She traveled from among all of the 125 branches of the New York Public Library and all the 5 boroughs of that city, telling stories to weekly story hours at the branch libraries. And we had a very interesting, what turned out to be a total of 4 years in New York. The last 2 years of those 4, I actually was working full-time for the State Department, but stationed at the American Geographical Society. We were then, of course, well into the war. And finally, at the end of 1944, my work that I had been doing for the State Department, which became of great interest to naval intelligence. It was a study of the distribution of ice in the seas of the Northern Hemisphere, and the relationship between this and navigation became of such great interest to the Navy that I was commissioned in the Navy at the beginning of 1944, spent 2 years at Fort, or 2 months at Fort Schuyler in officer training school, the old Merchant Marine Academy location out on Long Island. And in the early spring of 1944, Roberta and I were removed to Washington, where I spent most of the war working in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations in Washington, and ultimately producing an ice atlas of the Northern Hemisphere, which compiled all of the data with which I had been working for several years into a compendium of the average distribution of ice and icebergs in all of the northern seas of the world. An atlas that was ultimately on the bridge of every ship in the United States Navy. I had the good fortune in the war of having the services, by good chance, choose to use my professional expertise rather than to use me as manpower. And I had what was in many ways a very rewarding experience during the war years, in the sense that I had an opportunity to pursue problems that were of real professional interest and that called on my professional training as a geographer, and that permitted me to make what I think was probably the most significant contribution I was capable of making to the war effort. I had finished, fortunately, my PhD. I finished my thesis just before going into the Navy. I finished my thesis in the spring of 1942. And came back here to Madison for my oral exam it must have been May of 1942, and then ultimately returned for my for the commencement, and had the pleasure of my father escorting me across the platform for granting him my PhD degree. And it was after that that I got into the ICE work and ultimately into the Naval Intelligence. And it was in 1946, in the spring of 1946, after having been in the Navy for Naval Officer and Naval Intelligence for 2 years, and the war was over, and in the late spring of 1946, I accepted my first real academic position at the University of Minnesota as an assistant professor of geography at the munificent salary of, as I remember, about $3,600 a year, which then seemed a good academic appointment for a starter.
Oh yes, that's a lot of money then.
And I went to Minnesota, and I started teaching at Minnesota in the summer session of that year. Roberta and I came home to Wisconsin in May, when I was discharged from the Navy, and our first son was born here that May, and Roberta lived here in my father and mother's house. My father and mother were teaching in California that summer, and she stayed with our newly born son here in my father and mother's home on Spooner Street, while I went up to Minnesota and taught the 6 weeks or 8 weeks summer session, whatever it was. Lived in a rooming house up there, and Roberta and my young son Andrew moved to Minneapolis to join me in September, at which time housing was just unbelievable as a problem in the Twin Cities, as it was everywhere in those days. Mm-hmm. We had the good fortune of getting a university apartment. They were in Thatcher Hall, which was a university apartment, little university, a building of small apartments that had been built for graduate students, married graduate students, which they used for a few years there at the end of the war as a place for new appointments of young faculty members. Bert and I lived there for a year before buying our own first home in the St. Anthony Park area, out near the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota. And then lived in that home for another 8 years, during which time I progressed through the chairs of the geography department. I was promoted at the end of my first year at Minnesota, which would have been 47, to associate professor. And in the in that year, I had a I was offered the chairmanship and a full professorship in geography at the University of Illinois and the University of Minnesota, and their very kind anxiety to have me stay at Minnesota offered me a full professorship there. I became the youngest full professor that the University of Minnesota ever appointed, and that induced me to stay, which I did, and stayed at Minnesota until the end of 1950, the academic year 1954-55, and the last of those years at Minnesota, I served as the chairman of the department. I had a very, what I look back on as a very rewarding and successful career as a geographer. In 1954, I received the American Association of American Geographers Research Award for work I had done in studies of the Midwestern systems of agriculture, and I was completely happy in geography. I was not looking forward, I was not seeking in a career in university administration. I really was very much wrapped up in and absorbed with my agricultural geographic research. I was serving as a research consultant to the Midwest Barley Improvement Association down here in Milwaukee. And I enjoyed teaching. I had some excellent graduate students at Minnesota, some people who now are leaders in the field, and I was fully satisfied with my academic career.
Well, something must have happened, because this seems to mark the turning point.
Well, it did. I don't know exactly what happened. I had an increasing number of calls on my time at the University of Minnesota in committee work and sort of marginal kinds of administrative effort, effort in support of administrators of one kind and another. Along toward the, I guess it must have been in 1954, I was invited to look at two or three small college presidencies. I don't know quite who threw my name in those hoppers or quite how it happened, but all of a sudden the Board of Trustees at Lawrence was, College here in Wisconsin was looking at me as for president. At the time, Mr. Pusey went to, from the presidency at Lawrence to Harvard. And I pursued that quite a distance with the trustees at Lawrence. Ultimately, they or I decided that this wasn't going to actually be the best thing for me to do. I really had grown up in a public university environment, in a big university environment, and I wasn't very confident that I was going to be happy in a small college, or that I was adapted to life in a small college. When that those negotiations ultimately dissolved in whatever way they did, Grinnell College in Iowa, and then Ripon College here in Wisconsin, were two other institutions that urged me to look at the presidencies in those two cases, and I found myself backing away from that for whatever reason. As I say, I was really very satisfied with what I was doing, for one thing, and I wasn't sure I wanted to get into a small denominational college environment. And it was in the spring of 1955 that a man by the name of Brayfield, head of the psychology department, Arthur Brayfield, B-R-A-Y-F-I-E-L-D, came to my office in Minneapolis, and he turned out to be the head of the psychology department at Kansas State University in Manhattan. Interesting fellow, very articulate, very bright. He was one of the refugees from the University of California faculty who left there at the time when everybody in the faculty at Berkeley, you know, was forced to take loyalty oaths.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of the more sensitive and many of the very fine people at the University of California just picked up and left, thinking that was a completely improper intrusion on their personal thinking and personal lives. Brayfield was one of those refugees from Berkeley who'd gone to Kansas State and was operating a very live wire psychology department down there, and he came to see me. Turned out to be the head of a search team that was looking for a new dean of liberal arts in Kansas State.
Why did he come to see you?
Well, somebody had recommended me to them. I don't know who. And he came to see me to see whether or not he thought I looked like a prospect or whether I didn't. He went back to Kansas State, apparently convinced that I was a very likely prospect, or at least he and I had gotten along very well in our conversation, found we agreed on a lot of things, and the next thing I knew, President James McCain of Kansas State called me on the telephone and said that his committee had shown great interest in me, and would I be willing to come down to Manhattan and talk to them? Well, I thought, you know, why not? What's the... might have anything to lose by talking to them. I wasn't really pursuing an administrative job, as I'd said before. And I went to Manhattan. Jim McCain was a very bright, articulate, able younger man who had recently come to Kansas State from the University of Montana, where he'd been president. And McCain had me visit around to all of the a great variety of people in the College of Liberal Arts. Ultimately, invited me into his own office and said, "Now let's just take off the gloves and get right down to brass tacks about this." He said, "We're very much interested in persuading you that you should come here." He said, "I want to make Kansas State has had a long history as a separated land grant university with a with very strong traditions in agriculture and engineering." He said, "I want to, because I think this has got to have the future of a major university, I want to see that the College of Arts and Sciences is built up to a distinction and a strength that is more than the equal for coping with strong colleges of agriculture and engineering. And he said, I think you could do it, and why we want you to come. And he was a very persuasive fellow, and I somehow, I remember coming back to Minneapolis and sitting and visiting with Roberta and with one of my very closest professional friends, Professor H.H. McCarty, who was head of the geography department at the University of Iowa. He and his wife were in Minneapolis to spend the Memorial Day weekend with us, and I talked this rather unexpected and strange offer of going to Kansas State over with them. And I think where what we finally persuaded ourselves was, well, you can always go back to being a geographer anytime you want to be, but maybe if you don't take one of these administrative opportunities when you have a chance one of these days, you'll always wonder whether or not you might have been successful in administrative work and whether you would have enjoyed it. So maybe the least of the gambles that you would be taking would be to take on a deanship, and particularly one where there was a need for building some traditions for letters and science or arts and science, and give it a try and see how you like it. You can always go back to what you're doing, but if you don't try one of these things one of these days, you may always wonder why what kind of satisfactions you would have gotten if you had tried administrative work.
Did you see it as something of a challenge?
Yes, I did. It was definitely a challenge, and it was definitely sort of moving out to do something completely different. So after a weekend of mulling that one over, I called McCain and I said, if you really want me to come, I guess I will. I'd like to see if I can do the kind of a job that you'd like me to do. And so came August, we picked up and left the lovely lake country of Minnesota and went off to the dry Flint Hills of Kansas, and it was a very interesting experience.
How'd your wife feel about the change?
Well, I've always been fortunate in my wife's attitudes. Roberta has always taken the attitude of it's your career, you build it the way you want to, and I'm willing to do my part wherever you want to be. And she generally speaking has not tried to influence me pro or con about the moves that I've made. Her attitude has almost invariably been you decide what you'll be happy doing, and it'll be all right with me. We had a what was an exciting adventure for those 2 years that we were at Kansas. I take pride in being able to say that I put in motion the studies and the impetus that brought the BA degree to Kansas State. Up to then, there'd only, if you took a bachelor's degree in one of the traditional arts and sciences departments or fields, You got a Bachelor of Science degree. I set in motion a very wide ranging curricular range of studies that involving the faculty very widely, and what a Bachelor of Arts degree should be, what a liberal education really should be, and how it should be structured. And my last, one of the last faculty meetings over which I presided at Kansas State was the one in which that faculty approved the final structure of a BA degree, which was adopted by the State Board of Regents, and everybody felt that Kansas State had, with a Bachelor of Arts degree, moved into a completely new era in the life of that institution. I think there's no doubt that they did. It was exciting and challenging to be a part of doing that in an institution that had traditionally been the Aggies. And it was, I look back on our 2 years of, my first 2 years of being in full-time administrative work that were there associated with that institution in Manhattan, Kansas, as having been a wonderfully stimulating time. We developed some awfully good personal friends in Manhattan, friends that we still keep contact with, who many of whom have now left there, as we did. But I never have regretted having started an administrative career in that setting, which I think was a sort of an exciting beginning. Along about the middle of my second year at Kansas State, I was at a meeting of one of the national associations. I guess it was the Land Grant University Association, and had found myself having dinner one evening with Merck Hobson. Now, Merck Hobson has some history with the university here too, by way of family. Merck Hobson is the son of Asher Hobson, whom you may well have interviewed on this project.
No, I've talked to him, but he didn't want to be interviewed.
Well, that's too bad. He's a very, very interesting person in the history of the Wisconsin faculty. He was a distinguished chairman of the Department of Agricultural Economics. He and my father were very close personal friends over many years. And the Hobson's son, Merck, who I hadn't known terribly well when we were both younger men, because Merck was about 6-7 years younger than I was, and back in days when you're in school and college, that's enough behind so that you don't really get acquainted.
Right.
But we had gotten to know each other subsequently, because my father and mother and Merck's father and mother were such close personal friends. And Merck was at that time dean of a brand new young dean of engineering at the, he was a chemical engineer, and he was dean of engineering at the University of Nebraska. And this evening that he and I were having dinner together at the land grant meeting, Merck said, You know, he said, up at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, we're looking for a new graduate dean. And he said, our tradition at Nebraska is that the graduate dean is really the, in effect, really the academic leader of the university. By tradition, that's where the seat of influence of the academic development of the university has come from. And that was precisely the kind of tradition that I'd come out of at Minnesota, where Dean Theodore Blagan, who was a very close friend of mine at Minnesota, the dean of the graduate school there, he in most important ways was really the academic vice president of the University of Minnesota in the years I was there. And I always looked up to him and to the office of the graduate dean as a really significant place of influence in the building and the maintenance of a better university. And Merck said, is there any chance in the world? He said, I'm on the committee up here at Nebraska that's, or up at Lincoln, that's conducting a nationwide search to find ourselves a really top-notch graduate dean. He said, there isn't any chance we could interest you, is there? And, well, I said, I'm certainly willing to discuss it, but I said, I've hardly got my feet warm under the desk down at Kansas, and I said, I'm just not sure I ought to be considering moving it at this point. Well, he said, I think you ought to look at this. He said, University of Nebraska's got a fine academic tradition, and it's a lot bigger than Kansas State. And he said, I think you ought to think about it. Well, one thing led to another, and I was persuaded that maybe I should go to Nebraska. It was an AAU university, member of that fairly exclusive group of institutions that hangs together because they are the principal centers of graduate education and research in the United States. And ultimately, I was persuaded that if I was going to stay in administration, I ought to stay in administration in an AAU university. So they finally talked me into moving to Nebraska.
May I